Oh, shit's about to get real silly real fast. No idea. As I said there in the intro, things are about to get really super silly real fast. This is obviously referring to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis making a formal announcement for president and doing so on Twitter Spaces tonight. I have a piece coming to Bad Press at The Spectator about the pros and cons of all of this. I think it's less to do with DeSantis and more to do with Elon Musk. And this is, again, another kind of coup for what Elon Musk is doing with Twitter. And I think, to just put it as succinctly as possible, Elon Musk is attempting to, at least, and I think he's probably doing a better job of it than most, at making Twitter relevant again. And it's pretty relevant anyway, as far as the news is concerned, how newsrooms use it. And it's, again, it is a live news aggregation tool that is unmatched in the history of media. We're not all sitting around at our television sets watching the World Trade Center on fire. That's not the world we live in anymore. Now it's you get instant updates of events like that, and that has always been Twitter's power. But as far as relevance, Musk seems to be at least attempting to transform Twitter into a legitimate alternative media news source. And I'm going to go into all of that today, but I kind of write about that at Spectator. I also have a piece coming to Examiner. It's kind of like Milhouse at Show and Tell with his horsey after Bart brings the laser gun, and it's about the Biden administration getting their claws into AI under the terminology of responsible AI. And when I hear anything coming out of the Biden administration that involves equity and responsible AI, the spidey sense goes off and the horns come out of my head. And so I wanted to at least touch or tackle on that, and I'm sure that one's just going to get lost in the noise, but sometimes that's the breaks. My voice is a little, I still have that morning voice, because I spent most of yesterday doing writing, prep, whatever, and today is going to be podcast, and then call in tonight. And along those lines, I said that I would pass along any updates that I knew with Rumble's acquisition of Callin once that I know them, and now I know them. And what I can tell you is that tonight's episode of Callin will be the last for me and Versus Media live over on Callin. I think it's a good night slash topic to go out on, because I think it's going to bring out everyone. Everyone's going to have an opinion about him and this announcement, and God knows what happens during Twitter Spaces, and I'll go into that more. And unless I saw or heard or I'm mistaken, that's going to be a town hall with Trey Gowdy on Fox. We're already getting a preview of how silly things are about to get, as several media outlets ran with a story that Amanda Gorman had her poem banned from Florida schools. Amanda Gorman was the young teenage black poet laureate who read a poem at Joe Biden's inauguration, and that launched her to tons and tons of media outlets. And we're all supposed to kind of stand back and bask in her radiant brilliance. And so there's already a political angle to this. But just three outlets off the bat. Rolling Stone: Florida school bans Amanda Gorman's inaugural The Hill We Climb poem. This is the poem she read at Joe Biden's inauguration. The New York Times: Amanda Gorman's inauguration poem restricted by Florida school. USA Today: Amanda Gorman poem no longer available at young readers at Florida school. You don't want to know what they did? They didn't ban it. They moved it to a different part of the library. I 100% shit you not, that is what happened. So again, we've seen this kind of dumb media silliness with DeSantis over the last few months. And our media does the game where they just do negative story upon negative story upon negative story upon negative story. And then they show, well, DeSantis's public approval's gone down. Just as they've done with the Supreme Court. Negative story after negative story after negative story, or false rape allegations, or financial impropriety with Thomas and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and they just bombard with negative news stories. And then they take a public approval poll and say, oh, look how low public approval polling is for the Supreme Court, as if it matters constitutionally. It doesn't. But they are doing this, obviously, for a reason. And one is that it can be pretty much said now that DeSantis is the only viable alternative to Donald Trump right now in the Republican Party. And as I've said in the past, there can only be one alternative to Donald Trump. There can't be seven. Because if there are seven, he's walking again to the nomination. And do not underestimate the chances that he walks back into the White House. Do I think he can do that? Yeah, I think he can. Do I think he probably will? No. Trump is sort of, as I talked about with Hillary Clinton last week, he's baked. People aren't going to change their minds on him. And independents who hate him, especially suburban women, which pretty much turned against him and was the reason he lost the last election by several thousand votes, that's going to decide the election. States like Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and that's all she wrote. And Trump probably can't win those states. Because he won't shut up about the 2020 election and the Senate in Georgia and Brian Kemp. He hates Brian Kemp. And of course, he's not going to shut up about Fox and Arizona. And he's not going to shut up about a rigged election. He's still doing it over on his platform. So Republican voters have a choice. They don't have seven choices. They have one choice. And as I've said, we're going to learn a lot. I think fairly quickly about how this race is going to go, particularly with Ron DeSantis. I said we're going to learn a lot very quickly with him. It's May 24th, and I'll be here through Saturday. I will do a Saturday podcast. And then, as I noted, I will be off for a week, attempting to preserve any measure of sanity in a little vial in my medicine cabinet throughout the rest of the year. I do just want to state one last thing on call-in. When I was asked to do call-in, and I wasn't sure about the format, I was approached about it and said, hey, would you want to come and try this and da-da-da-da. And I'm not a traditionally trained communications guy anyway. I like to talk. I have a gift of gab, sort of speak, I've been told. And so it was similar to when John Gabriel asked me to be part of the Conservatarians. That was obviously years and years ago, and I was just kind of a little fledgling on the conservative online scene, still am, and I'd been approached to do, you know, partnerships and podcasts, and I always kind of turned them down because I'm weary about who you attach yourself to, especially in this arena. I think you have to be. You have to be skeptical of actors in media, and it's up to you guys to decide who you think is authentic, who do you think is manipulating you for your political emotion or your money, most importantly. And I've always been weary of being viewed that way, and I think, thankfully, I can confidently say that I'm not. And a lot of that has been much to the detriment of my own career and career trajectory. I have passed up several opportunities to probably make obscene amounts of money, because I do think that there has to be a level of integrity with what I do. And so when John Gabriel asked me if I would podcast with him on the Conservatarians, John to me has always been an honest actor. And we have similar interests, music interests and film and stuff like that. He's kind of like an older version of me. And I liked his soothing Dr. Demento style voice. So I don't have experience with this, so here are some ideas that I have, and we just kind of rolled with it. And I was never really paid for the Conservatarians. I saw some sponsor checks once in a while. So I think I kind of took to the format, and I think I've gotten better at this as the years have gone on. So when I was invited to do call-in, it was a format I've never done, which is essentially live radio. I'm taking callers, I'm listening to them, I'm responding to them, I'm reacting to them in real time, and it's something I'm not used to. And I thought, I can do this. It'll be interesting at least. And I want to say, and I'll probably say it a bit tonight as well, that I've had more fun doing it than I thought I would. There's times when I dread kind of getting on. It has nothing to do with people, has nothing to do with callers, has nothing to do with, oh fuck, that person's up again, or anything like that. It's just, I get just the anxiety of doing something live. It's never enough that cripples me, but you do get it, and it's like, all right, how's this gonna go? And I've enjoyed it, like I said, more than I thought I would because I've just learned so much from just people. And I think that that is the pitfall that most people in my position in media fall into, especially as it pertains to social media. Social media is not just for me to talk and to promote work and have a podcast while you all just listen. It is not a tool or a platform, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, for a certain few people with followings, celebrity followings, to talk while you listen. Social media is about you having a voice. It's about everyone having a voice and everyone kind of elbowing and moshing their way into the pit of the conversation. That's for the most part how I kind of got my whole start. I just kind of elbowed my way in. And so when I was kind of approached to do it with guests and interviews, I rejected that outright. And I said, that's not what I think these platforms should be used for. To have a select few people having podcasts or having shows, and I'm interviewing the same select people or having the same guests that you can hear on other podcasts. I think it's far more interesting to turn the microphone over to the crowd and hearing what they have to say. Some of it's great, a lot of it's good, some of it's nuts, but that doesn't make it any less valuable. And I've always said, for someone in my position, whether it's a podcast or appearing on TV, the worst thing you can always do is act smarter about things than you actually are. And this is how Colin has been so instructive to me. I've talked to parents, I've talked to lawyers, I've talked to teachers, I've talked to aviation pilots. And it's all about their job and their experience. And as I said, I mean, my favorite episode, and I don't know if the platform folds or not, or if it's just going to get stale, but my favorite episode, of course, was the school shooting at Uvalde and this idea of single entrance doors. And it's the prime example of how little our pundit class and our commentary class actually know jack shit about anything and how much you guys, in your lived experience, actually know. And it's also one of those things where they can say this. Idiots like Tim Miller can make fun of the idea on his Twitter account and his stupid Bulwark show about single entrance schools. Oh, I went to a college that has like 50 doors. How are you going to do that? Or whatever. And then I can turn a microphone over to you guys. And I think I spoke to about 15 to 20 people that night, and every single one of them said their kid goes to a single entrance school in the front. They don't allow strangers in the building. You line up to pick them up, and all the doors around the school do not have door handles on the outside. It was a perfect example of you guys telling these people that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Do I think that people like Tim Miller are going to learn anything from that? No. But it does illustrate just how completely full of shit they are on these issues. And odds are, if they're completely full of shit on that issue, if they just use it as a talking point, like the cool kids table, really? Just one door in and out? What about a fire? Do you think about a fire? If there was a fire or whatever? Of course they don't. But you guys, in your lived experience with kids in schools, you know what the truth is, and you know that they're lying. And you know that they're lying for popularity and political points to line their bank accounts. And that to me will always be at least the ultimate value to a platform like Colin. And there's Twitter as well. People can reply to them. But it's different when you actually hear someone go, yeah, I take my kids to and drop off school and it's a single entrance school and they don't let you in. And I've had a few episodes like that. Some are just kind of people ranting, what pisses them off in the world. And, you know, that's totally fine too. and some are just bullshitting about hockey or the Stanley Cup playoffs or what have you, and that's all been fine and good. But again, being able to talk to, you know, lawyers in California and teachers in Texas or teachers in Colorado or wherever, it's just been a unique experience, and it's one that I'm going to take with me. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.